Welcome back. Hope you had a good break. I ran a few flights of stairs. I'm all energetic and sweaty. But welcome back. We're going to dive into the next module now, which Arvind's going to walk us through how to optimize your application and how to get the most out of your DocumentDB account.
Yeah, we've gone through the basics now. Like how you get your data in, how to create documents, collections.
And how to write some queries.
Now it's time to get work on some real problems.
Roll up the sleeves.
Yeah.
Get stuck in. Right, let's go.
So let's start. In this session, we will take a look at a few concepts. Now, these are not concepts unique to DocumentDB, but we'll look at the numbers that you should care about. And we can take a look at how you go about building an application on DocumentDB. We've gone through this process writing apps ourselves and talking to customers, so we might be able to give you some feedback as to the things to look out for when you design an app up front, where you can think about scale and performance, and go through some tips, some things that you might miss in the documentation but will come really in handy. And towards the end, request units, that's what everyone wants to know about.
What is this thing called a request unit?
Yeah.
How do I know what it is? That's excellent.
It's beautiful. We'll take a look at this. We'll also look at what it means to have different collection performance tiers and how to move between them.
Cool.
So let's jump right in. So here we have performance concepts. So we'll talk about request units, latencies, consistency levels, all the fun stuff. To begin with, there are three things that are important in terms of performance in most applications. You care about latency, so how long it takes for the database to serve things like reads, writes, mm-hmm. and queries. You care about networking, because now you're running in the cloud, so you want to know how your network is doing, what protocols to use, what settings to use. You care about round trips, because everything is over HTTP REST.
Absolutely.
So you care about how many operations you make and how many times you do this.
I mean, network latency is one of the things that you really, you know, like you said, you do care about. But you know, if you're running a web application and that's running in Azure websites or and it's in the same data center as your document database, yeah, network latency is not that much of an issue because you've got sub-second kind of, you know, network round trips. But if you're building an IoT application, you know, where you've got thermostats in your house, and they're connecting over a tiny GSM network to a DocumentDB sitting somewhere in our data centers, then you most definitely care about network latency, right?
And
network
trip times. Yeah, and user expectations have really grown, and that's
Absolutely.
Part of the pain that developers face building these applications.
Yeah, by the time I've finished clicking my mouse button, I want the page to have loaded. I
mean, yeah.
I don't even want to wait a second for the page to load.
And DocumentDB is built for that use case,
Absolutely.
To give you like really low millisecond,
sub-millisecond
reads and such. But how do you go about achieving that?
Absolutely.
And and how do you tease apart the different issues that make up performance? We'll touch upon that a little bit.
Cool.
We'll talk about throughput, because throughput is another aspect to performance other than latency. And that's where request units comes in. Mm-hmm. So how much can you serve per second, and what kind of performance tier you need to serve your application needs, and how do you estimate this? And estimation, as we all know, is a hard problem. But we've tried to make it easier than...
We're trying to make it a bit more of a science and less of an art, right?
Exactly. And especially predictable performance is really important for a managed NoSQL database, and that's one of the key value propositions of DocumentDB, where you know you can measure what performance you get for any operation, and you can profile your application, and as it scales and grows, you will get that consistent, predictable performance. So that's
you don't one day execute your query and it's quick, and the next day you execute the query and it's horribly slow, and you just don't know where you are. Right?
Or worse, your database just stops scaling and you have to start over.
Yeah.
So that's one of the benefits of DocumentDB and NoSQL in general.
Okay.
So we look at collections and scale out and how the concept of horizontal scale works, and a little bit of a topic that's not talked about, but staleness is also important. So what it means in the context of when you get stale results, how stale is stale, There's been a lot of interesting metrics in the industry about probabilistic staleness. We'll talk about how DocumentDB behaves in this, as well as touch upon how you can go about measuring it and improving staleness. So we looked at this briefly, but consistency levels are a necessary evil, because the CAP theorem has proved that you cannot have consistency, availability, and partition tolerance at the same time. And the same thing being with latency and consistency. Mm-hmm. You can have one or the other, you can't have both. But but that's an absolute. Within the constraints of certain problems, you can have both. When you sacrifice certain things, like in session, where you say you have strong consistency with the benefit of the latency of eventual consistency, just by exchanging a session token back and forth. So the one part is with the various consistency levels you have within DocumentDB, strong consistency is going to have the highest write latencies of them all, because any write will have to go to and get acknowledged by a quorum of our replicas. Now, I've had a few people ask me how many replicas DocumentDB uses, how it guarantees these SLAs on availability, but part of it is the service decides how much needs to be there. It's almost abstracted away from the developer.
Yeah, the developer doesn't need to know, right? The developer just really needs to know that we maintain enough replicas to maintain the quorum, and so that we can give you that kind of consistency level that you've signed up for.
Yeah, and it's built to handle network failures, built to handle hardware failures, as well as when we roll out software upgrades. These are all things that you don't have to worry about. And at the same time, while all of this happens, the DocumentDB guarantees the consistency level in terms of the what you get back from your response.
Cool.
Again, what this means in terms of the offerings that we have is strong consistency is going to have roughly 1.5 to 2 times the amount of latency for a write than an eventual consistency write, because we don't have to get the acknowledgement. And at the same time, reads, depending on the consistency level you use, the amount of data you write, your reads could take longer as well, because we'll have to go and talk to more replicas than one. Though in practice, if you're not operating at full capacity, you should see very similar numbers across the board. The operative word here more so is the guarantee than the consistency. Mm-hmm. So here, in terms of latency, you can expect sub-millisecond or millisecond reads in just about any of the consistency levels. Sure. And very low single-digit millisecond writes per second as well. Another part of this is, and it's this gets missed sometimes, but this is another powerful hook, is you can control the index consistency separate from the data zone consistency. So when you maintain you define an indexing policy, and this is done at the collection level, what you can control is how frequently the index gets updated. You can say, I want strong consistency, or I want session consistency, then having a consistent index guarantees that for you.
Cool.
But then at the same time, for bulk ingestion, you can turn it off to lazy indexing.
Also have a lazy index.
Yeah, and then the index runs only when you're not operating at full capacity. So the index catches up over time as your requests back off. Okay. Then your queries start to serve consistent results.
Cool. So you may, if you're running in lazy index mode, you may, for a period, get inconsistent kind of query results. You may search for a record that may not be there.
Exactly.
Because it hasn't been indexed yet.
That's true. And this would, the amount of time it would take for the index to catch up really depends on your load on the collection.
Yeah. So if I keep hammering it with very high, you know, write operations and consistency, you know, I'm using my full requests and don't give the index enough time to kind of catch up, then I'm going to live in this world where I might not kind of see my results for a period of time. So lazy indexing is really good for that period where, you know, on the first day of every month, I've got, you know, an an hour or two of massive kind of write volume, and then for the rest of the month, it kind of like, or the rest of the day, or the rest of the hour, or whatever, then the writes back off, and for the rest of the time, I serve reads out of that query.
Yeah, things like log data, where it's not necessary to have queryability right away, but you care more about ingesting more data.
Ingesting more data and querying it later.
Yeah. Okay. So into throughput, we looked at this briefly in the management example. Mm-hmm. So you have three flavors of collections, and they are three performance levels. Now, collections are always fixed size. So they all come at 10 gigabytes of size, and that includes data and index. So what you can do is you can stack up as many of these collections as you need. You can start by default. A collection gets you 250 request units per second. Now, we will dig a little bit into what that means, but you can think of it as 250 simple reads per second of 1 kilobyte documents. So it's small operations, 250 of them per second. Of course, that adds up to millions and billions over periods of days and weeks of requests. There is no, we enforce a cap only on a per second rate, but nothing more on a longer window. So you can be, you know that your application will not be subject to throttling or long-term throttling of any kind.
Yep.
There are two additional performance tiers that for applications that need this higher rate of performance, and they're the S2 and S3 collections. So when you design an application, it's important to understand what these collections offer. Decide which one you want to pick, as well as decide how many collections you want to create. And lastly, what kind of a sharding policy you want on top of these collections.
Okay.
And Ryan has a session shortly following this that goes into...
It goes into quite deep detail on sharding and stuff. Okay. Yep.
Request units. Well, we're finally here. So request units.
What is a request unit?
You can think of it as the throughput currency or performance currency in DocumentDB. Now, the problem with designing for performance in any database or in any application in general is you have these multiple dimensions that contribute comprise performance. So you are never quite done when you're performance tuning because you never know which one's going to be a bottleneck.
Exactly.
So here what we do is we try to collapse all of this information. The part of the reason that DocumentDB cannot just say reads and writes is because it's a full-blown database. You can do things like queries, which are wildly different from each other, queries running JavaScript functions, stored procedure executions. It's hard to sandbox them into a particular operation time because they're all different. So the request unit gives you this one number that tells you how much an operation takes. And what you can do is just take the kinds of things that you do. So here we're looking at a read operation. So that consumes typically one request unit. Then you have a write operation that's going to take a little bit more because writes are more expensive than reads in terms of I/O. You also have something like a put. Now that will need a little bit more operations than a write because you know you'll have to go update the index in some cases. You'll have to delete stuff and you'll have to reinsert stuff. The same with query execution. Let's say it's something against the index. It's going to be really cheap, and that's kind of going to be the key within while designing queries, is making sure that your queries use the index, consume a small number of request units, so your application can scale seamlessly as your query workload increases. Now, in the next part, we'll kind of walk through a few of a checklist of things that you look through when you design an application on DocumentDB. Because one is you will have to think in terms of scale, DocumentDB, and the second is since due to its flexibility, you don't have some of the common traditional tasks like designing schema upfront. But there is still merit in having and thinking about your schema and how you want your documents to be structured as you go about designing your system. So. The rough flowchart, as at least as we have found works well in thinking of a system and how it's going to run with DocumentDB is first think of your data as it appears as JSON. So especially this is true if your data isn't already in JSON, then you can think about the shapes of the documents as they will exist. Mm-hmm. Now, we looked at collections as this partition. So they're not quite tables, but they are this partition. They can contain schemaless data. So what you want to do is see which collections of JSON documents can exist together. So how you would group them together within collections. And a nice way to go about this process is thinking in terms of your most common workloads. So list your top 5 to 10 queries. Try to write them as SQL statements against your JSON. And as part of the next step, try running your queries, measure your request units, tweak your indexing policy.
So I mean, when you're building your application, you're going to have an idea of what these queries are, right? So I mean, if you're writing an application that is a blog engine, you'll know that you know your typical operations will be posting a new blog document, loading comments, posting a comment, listing documents by subject, by tag, by author, that kind of stuff. So you'll have a good idea of what kind of typical workloads your application will do, right? And that's what you're talking about in terms of what are your top 5 queries. You know, construct those against your real JSON, okay? And then measure the request units. So you don't have to guess what the request unit is. You'll show us just now how to measure that request unit, right?
Right.
Okay, cool.
So some thumb rules to follow while designing your data model is you have to think about the JSON type system if you're already working on something that doesn't use JSON. You'll have to think about what it means for things like timestamps, how you want to store them as simple numbers or strings. Mm-hmm. You'll have to, especially when you're thinking in terms of scale, the thumb rule to follow is smaller documents are better because you have lesser I/O. You can read more of them in a single batch.
Less network I/O, less disk I/O.
Less index management.
Yeah.
But in some cases, and a 16 kilobytes document, for example, that you can store in JSON can store a lot of information. So but certainly it's a thumb rule. It doesn't fit all use cases. Mm-hmm. In some cases where you always have a large document to read, you might be better off just storing your entire information in one document. But understand that the request unit implication that has and in terms of how many simultaneous requests you can support.
Absolutely. Okay.
We looked at documents, and I think we touched upon this briefly. Is if you have binary data or you have freeform text, the best place for this to reside is as an attachment. So where you store, either you use our manage attachments feature, or you use something like an external storage account, like blob storage, or you store it in SkyDrive, and then you store the URL information in DocumentDB, along with all the metadata that you need to store in query. Mm-hmm. That's often the best way, the most scalable way.
Cool.
To store your information.
So you store the metadata to the attachment, right? So you can, I mean, if I just stored a blob in Azure Blob Storage, I don't really get any searchable, queryable metadata, right? I can go to Blob Storage and I can retrieve it by its URL, and that's pretty much it. Mm-hmm. So what you could do there is build a JSON metadata that describes all the attributes that you want to kind of query for that document. So maybe it's type, who the author was, when it was created, an array of tags, keywords, whatever the case may be, and store that as the metadata in DocumentDB with the actual binary attached, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
So other things that you might not have thought of is think in terms of does your data format lend well to query? By that I mean, let's take this example. Let's say you have a document that has a service type, which is Azure, and then a service name, which is DocumentDB. Now, if you use the service name DocumentDB in queries, that's going to be more selective. That lets you filter down to a smaller set of documents versus something where you said a service type is Azure, because it means it'll have to look through a bunch of candidate documents and filter it down.
Mobile apps, web apps, virtual networks, VMs, whatever, until it gets to DocumentDB.
Yeah.
But if you just go for Azure DocumentDB, then you'll get a very specific set, straight away.
Exactly. And so you could write a query that says service type is Azure and service name is DocumentDB. That's going to do well. Mm-hmm. But if you want to take it even further, if you had a query that said my service.fullname is Azure DocumentDB, now that's going to be the fastest. Okay. Because if you had other kinds of DocumentDB, we can just use the index to go right down to the smallest set of documents that match.
And you know, like we were talking, I mean, on dates, for instance, you can store the date as the full string. You can then store the day, the month, the year as separate strings, and you can store an epoch time value as a number. So, in fact, there's multiple ways to represent a single piece of data. And what I always say when I'm thinking about modeling my data, I always tell people, well, there's no one way to model your data, right? You model your data based on how you're going to write it and read it, basically. So that's what you're saying here. If I'm going to read my data on a compound field like Azure DocumentDB, then consider storing it as Azure DocumentDB.
Yeah, and a document database, especially DocumentDB, gives you that kind of flexibility to experiment.
Yeah.
Now, if you wanted to do an equality check based on a case-insensitive search, mm-hmm. now one way to do it and make sure it's served by the index. The first way you would try doing it is use a UDF that does implements case insensitive comparison. Now the problem with that is it would lead to a scan. But then if you stored the lowercase representation of the string duplicated along with its common representation and you queried
the pretty format.
Yeah. And that way you know that it's always served by the index.
And then you can get really fancy by excluding out the pretty format that's going to be used for display purposes, because you're never going to query on that and only index on the index friendly version of the field if you really want to get fancy, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So there are tons of options to optimize.
So many different ways. Okay.
But the magic number as always is the request unit.
Yeah. So watch that request unit and try to get that request unit. You know, experiment and play around with different data models and different query structures and different index policies until you can get that request unit down as low as you possibly can. Okay.
So index policy, we briefly talked about it in the query section, but in terms of designing real apps, the first thing that you would likely want to look at is, do you need range indexing? Now, if you have things like querying against timestamps, chances are you need range indexing on those paths. But if you're doing things like, I have a number that's a zip code, chances are I don't need to do a query on a zip code by range, then you don't necessarily want a range index with the additional space that it might need. Mm-hmm. So think about if you need range indexing, and if you don't have range indexing, now by default, the query would fail and ask you to create a range index. But once you have that index, you can see the request units are really low because it's...
I can, even if I don't have a range index, I can actually force a scan in my query using a directive, which we can talk about later. But
yes.
I can, you know, if it's a once in... We don't recommend forcing a scan because it's going to cost you a lot. But, you know, if this is a once-off kind of query and you know, you're doing it 1% of the time, whatever, that you may consider just enabling scan on query.
Yeah, enable scan and query is definitely, we didn't want to make it the default, so you hurt yourself unintentionally. But yeah. You can certainly turn it on in the query options and do a
it's
scan.
It's like putting a handrail on the top of a roof. We want to make sure that you don't intentionally or accidentally step off the edge of the building. But nothing's going to stop you from climbing over that handrail if you want to and throwing yourself off the building. So, okay, cool.
So within queries, another important aspect to controlling how much request units you consume is think in terms of how you page through queries. Mm-hmm. Now, in some cases, the most common way most people use querying is through link. And now link has really convenient, really simple shorthands that let you to do things like just give you an IEnumerable and you iterate through it. Now, one of the things that happens with that is you would materialize all the results in the query, which might involve multiple round trips to the server. It might require fetching hundreds or thousands of documents, which you might not actually need. Now, in some cases, if your API or your web page just shows 100 results, then you can just use the DocumentDB SDK or the REST API just to fetch those 100 results or a page of results as you need. And this can be controlled using some of the headers and the properties in the REST in the .NET SDKs to say to pass in item counts. And we also return continuation tokens back, like a lot of REST services, that come back in your response. And you can use those to resume execution of your query at any point. Partitioning, I briefly touched upon partitioning. This is something you'll have to think about fairly early in the process, especially because this dictates how your queries are going to work. If all your data is going to be in a single collection, then you could have that be a hotspot. So it's important to think in terms of how your data can be distributed evenly while providing the same guarantees that you need, like transactions. And we'll take a close look at partitioning in a bit. And in terms of capacity planning, so these are the main things you have to consider. Think in terms of how much storage you need. Think in terms of what's the throughput you need. So you'll need to provision as many collections, whatever is the greater among the two. And in terms of staleness and network latency, understand and measure what you would need from an end-to-end experience. And play around with the network settings as well to get the performance you need. Now, before getting into this, I'd like to do a quick demo as to how request units work in the context of small documents.
Cool. And how we can actually see the request units. And
yeah. So here I have a sample demo document. We will be publishing this as part of code samples in MSDN, so you can take a look. The setup code is fairly boring, so I create a database, I create a collection, and what I'm doing initially is I'm just using the default settings, which is consistent indexing. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to create documents of different sizes and shapes. So here, for the first thing is I use Dynamics because it's easier to create arbitrary documents on the fly. So I have a small document. It's about 1 kilobyte, and it has 10 properties. So what I'm doing here is take this document, and I'm going to create it. And what I get back is this wrapper object called resource response of document. Now, this is the same for all the other operations within DocumentDB. When you perform operations against single entities, you always get this wrapper object. And if you're familiar with the REST API, you can think of it as containing all the useful response headers that you got back from the API. So in this case, the one that we care about mostly is this one called createResponse.requestCharge. So in here, what I'm logging is I'm logging the size of the document. I'm logging number of properties in the document, because for a document of the same size, you're going to consume more request units if you have more properties in them, because there is more of an indexing overhead. The I/O is going to remain the same, but indexing is going to be more expensive.
Fair enough.
We go through the full gamut of operations. So we look at create. We try and do a read. Then we do a replace of that document, and then we delete it. So let's run through this. So this spewed off a bunch of results, but let's take a close look at this and see if we can rationalize this. And I'll walk through why these numbers are the way they are. Now, first, you look at a 1 kilobyte document. You see that the read request took about one request unit, which makes sense because this is quite possibly the smallest document you can write. You look above, the create of the document took about 7 request units, and that's partially because of the size of the document, the I/O to perform it, as well as the indexing of those terms within the document. Now, I did a couple of things in here. The first is I updated the document with no changes, So you can see it took about 10 request units because there was literally no index update that needed to be performed. It was just the I/O of updating the payload of the document with a new document. And delete, unsurprisingly, consumes about the same number of request units as the create. Here, as we step in, I'm showing the massive document, which is about 50 kilobytes and has 1,000 different properties. All of them are a GUID, so it's quite literally the worst possible scenario for an index. But here, you can see that document took about 200 request units. The read was so much cheaper because there is no index work that needs to be performed. The read completed in under 4 request units. And this is partially because reading a larger document is sequential I/O, so it's cheaper than doing a read over maybe in this case 50 small documents. And the same thing goes by. I'll have another example of a document that's exactly the same size but just has one massive string. In that case, you see that the indexing overhead is really low because you look down at the third document. And that consumes only about 20 RUs on insert. So I have more of these options and numbers. We won't go through these now, but play around with this sample and log your request unit charge as part of the operation. Yeah. That always gives you a shorthand in terms of...
So the request unit charge comes back in all of our SDKs on every operation, right? So whether that's a read, whether that's a write, whether the read was, or whether your operation was successful or not, you get back the charge. You can grab it if you're using Fiddler or Postman or whatever, you can actually see the request charge there as well. It comes across as a header in the HTTP response.
Yeah.
Cool. So that's it. You don't actually have to guess what your request charges are. You can actually see what they are, and you can and see what they are for your actual data in your actual environment. Cool. That's excellent.
Wrapping up, just a summary of the things that we've seen so far. We have taken a look at a few concepts that you care within the document DB. So we have looked at the key performance concepts, namely latency. We've looked at throughput and dive deep into request units and how you measure request units, how you manage your indexing policy. We looked at a little bit in terms of how you design an application, starting from scratch, how you think about how scale impacts your design and how you structure it for efficient queries with low request units. And we also walked through a demo as to how you can take an application in .NET or in Fiddler and measure what that means in terms of scalability. Thank you.
Cool. So that's it. We're going to take another 10-minute break, and then we'll be back with the final module before we break for lunch. So grab a couple of minute break, and we'll be back shortly with the next module.